Bibles, if you would, to Mark chapter 1. We're going to look at a verse here before we go to Revelation. And I do thankful that Megan's with us. Now, have you been in class before?
No, that's my first time. This might be my only Sunday, but
okay.
I got at least today off.
Okay. Okay. Well, I know we've met you on Friday night some, and so we're glad you're here on Sunday. And what do you work at?
I watch my niece and nephews.
Okay. Okay. Pat, would you mind handing these out?
But I can't have them since I'm in the boot. So. I have two boots on right now.
Okay. So. Wow. Well, hopefully you heal up.
I can't run after the smallest one. So.
Gotcha.
About to be crawling.
Gotcha. Mark chapter 1 is what we're going to look at before we go to Revelation. So Matthew, Mark.
1324.
Thank you.
And I forgot my mouse.
I hate that when I forget my mouse. So we are in chapter, we're going through these seven vials. And some of these pictures look kind of scary, and they're not King James, so I apologize for that. Our King James Bible says that they're unclean spirits. And so that's what I wanted us to look at in Mark chapter 1. There's a mention of an unclean spirit here. So when we talked about, I'm just trying to, last week we talked about the vial, the fifth vial, and the sixth vial. And it was the, this is the sixth vial. They had these three unclean spirits like frogs. And if you look at verse 23, somebody read that for us, Mark 1:23.
And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out.
Yeah, read the next two verses also, Belinda.
Saying, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God." And Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Hold thy peace and come out of him."
So Jesus cast out this unclean spirit, and I wanted us to notice that it was in the synagogue, and we think that the devil hangs out at the bars and where the drug deals go down, or some wicked establishment or whatever. But here, this unclean spirit is in the synagogue, and we would, in our vernacular, we would say the church. This is where God's people are. And so I had you put that in your second blank. I gave you a couple tables there on your handout. We're not going to spend much time here because I do have a 30-minute video I want us to play today.
But that was
your first blank was kingdom. I'm sorry. I kind of got them backwards here. Because this fifth vial, so now let's all go to chapter 16 of Romans, or Revelation, or Revelation, like Jim said, it's not Revelations, it's just Revelation singular, it's the revelation of Jesus Christ. So Revelation 16, and so we're, this is some of the... you know, these things are pretty epic in proportion, you know, as far as affecting the whole world. And this fifth vial is in verse 10 and 11, 16, 10 and 11, says, "And the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast, and it says his kingdom was full of darkness." And I'll stop there, but so these subjects are of the beast kingdom, and they blaspheme God, and they do not repent. And we'll see that with the seventh vial here in just a minute, that they don't repent either. So they blaspheme. That means they slander God and His name. And so God is judging them for this. And so what I did in your two charts there is I kind of put categories of unclean spirits or demonic spirits. And that's what I wanted to see from Mark, because this kind of surprised me when I initially heard it and read this. But there's also familiar spirits in the Bible. I gave you some references for that. The unclean spirits. So I kind of consider these categories of demonic spirits. There's evil spirits. There's wicked spirits in the Bible. And then seducing spirits. And that's connected with the end times, the 1 Timothy 4. And then this next chart at the bottom, there's kind of specialized demonic spirits. And one thing you have to be careful about is, you know, some, you know, a lot of charismatic folk might say, you know, "I'm going to cast out the spirit of sickness out of you." You know, those are not Bible words. Or, you know, the spirit of divorce, you know, "Heal this couple of the spirit of divorce." And so those are not things in the Bible. So we want to be biblical in our understanding. And so let's just read some of these. This spirit of jealousy, I want you to note that the Bible actually says that God is a jealous God. He is jealous for His people, and He protects His people. And so there is kind of a good thing about that one. There's a spirit of divination. Those are demonic. A spirit of infirmity, a spirit of whoredoms, a perverse spirit. And I kind of group these two at the bottom together, spirit of deep sleep or spirit of slumber. And then I gave you another column over there to the right. There's a spirit of fear, a spirit of the world, spirit of Egypt. Those are probably similar. There's a haughty spirit in Proverbs, a spirit of bondage, and there's a lying spirit. And at the top of that chart, in 1 John, there's a spirit of Antichrist. So that kind of goes along with our study. And we noted that anti, you know, means against, which is obvious. Like, you know, you put antifreeze in your radiator, but the Antichrist is not only against Christ, but also you could use the word instead of. So we know that the devil counterfeits, so you could almost say instead of also. Instead or against, so anyway, this is kind of by way of review. I didn't want to pass by this, you know, these unclean spirits like frogs without giving you this chart about the demonic spirits. So now we're going to kind of get into the new material. We'll try to finish out this chapter. But let's look at Acts 16, and we're going to read 17 through 21. And let me read this, fairly lengthy. 17 of Revelation 16. It says, "And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came out of the temple of heaven..." Nope. And there came out a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, it is done. And I'll stop there for just a minute. I brought in these little vials from work, and I forgot to pour out the vial, but the sixth vial was the Euphrates dries up. And so we're going to pretend like this is the sixth vial, and the angel is dumping out his vial onto the earth. And then what we read there was the seventh vial that was poured out. And it says, there's this great voice. It is done. And he pours out his vial. And we're going to see what happens here when this seventh angel pours out his vial. So now all the vials have been poured out. In verse 18 it says, and there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth. So mighty an earthquake and so great. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But do you know that this Iran war that's going on, some of the news I seen, they called it an earthquake. Like they said there's an earthquake in Iran, and it wasn't a literal earthquake, but it was the bombing and the shaking, and they were calling that war an earthquake. And verse 19 says, and the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And then verse 20 is a small verse, but it says a lot. It says, and every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. And so that's chapter 16, and I put it's a great earthquake, and hail is kind of this seventh vial that was poured out. And I'll just give you a few comments from your handout at the top of the back of your page. The devil is the prince of the power of the air. So when this angel pours out his vial, he pours it out into the air, and Ephesians 2:2 says that the devil is the prince of the power of the air. And I think it's connected with just our human spirit in the context there in Ephesians. And then this is really the largest earthquake, and there's been some studies done, but I think that you know, we talked about the ring of fire when we were in the first few chapters of Revelation, and how that earthquakes are becoming greater and more frequent. And there's a lot of things about that, but here this is the greatest earthquake in the history of the world, because every island fled away, and the mountains were removed. That's a big statement, isn't it? How do you spell mountain, Debbie?
K-I-M-O-U-N. D-I-N.
You got it.
Okay. All right. I was stuck there. But think about that. Isn't a Hawaii an island?
Yes.
What if that was no more, right? You think about, you know, Pike's Peak, you know, would that mountain be gone? You know, these are all, that's what it's saying, isn't it? And I know Pastor Brian says sometimes that Revelation is not hard to understand, but it is hard to believe. I mean, that's hard to believe, isn't it? I mean, these are just unbelievable statements. And even for these hailstones to fall, the thing I was listening to said, you know, a hail the size of a talent. I forget the largest hailstone on record. It was about 2.5 pounds, so it's a little bigger than a softball, probably. Maybe it was close to 3-pound hail. And I don't know what, you know, terminal velocity is if falling, but it's probably 100 miles an hour, right? I don't know how fast they actually fall. It'd be a good thing to look up, but is it 120? Is about as fast as something can fall. Okay, so 100, you know. But they said a talent would be about the size of a beach ball. So think about the difference between a softball-sized hail that would do a lot of damage and a beach ball-sized hail. I mean, that's close to 100 pounds. So I had you put just the word beach in your... Anyway, very scary thoughts. And like Jim often says, you know, we won't be here. The church will be raptured out. We'll be watching this from heaven. And there is example in Joshua of another supernatural stoning where God killed people with hailstones. So there's example in Joshua. And then also this is the punishment for blasphemy in the Bible, in the Old Testament, was stoning, like with rocks. And so this is part of God's judgment. And twice in this chapter, I think it says that God's judgment is righteous. In other words, you know, we get frustrated that, our judicial system is not equitable. It's not just. The punishment doesn't always fit the crime. You know, sometimes, you know, the murderer almost gets off free and the person smoking pot gets, you know, years in jail, right? So those are, it's not, and we don't like a double standard. So twice in here, the whole earth is saying, God, your judgment is righteous. The punishment fits the crime. So these people blaspheme the Lord, and so he stones them. That's his law. And so that's all kind of leading up to what I thought I would do. I've got a 30-minute video here on Iran. So I had you put Iran as your last blank there. And I've listened to this video twice, and I learned some things in it. It's really historical, so this is not really prophetical. It's not really sensational, but I think it helps us see, you know, some of us probably couldn't find Iran on a map. And I was guilty of that not so long ago, so don't feel bad. So we'll see where it's at. We'll connect some Bible story. We'll connect some history. And so I listened to it this week, and I wrote these notes. So these are my notes, and I put a blank out beside. If you want to kind of take notes as we listen, hopefully this will come through. And hopefully you can hear if you're listening online. And I'm going to just lay my microphone here. Oh, real quick, I'll show you this. Some of you know I went to Israel back in 2019. And I told you, we visited Mount Carmel where Elijah slew the prophets of Baal. So this is the Israelite statue of Elijah stoning the prophets of Baal. So, but what I didn't know is Mount Carmel, right behind it is the Valley of Megiddo, or we would say Armageddon. And so, that was the statue. And I don't have my mouse, but let me, this was the little entrance, into the Mount Carmel. So I took a picture of that. So you walk through this, and, you're walking up to the top of Mount Carmel, and, and I told you that Brother Sam Miles gave a message from 1 Kings 19 or 18 about Elijah slaying the prophets of Baal. And right behind him is the Valley of Megiddo. And if you remember, Elijah had his servant go to the top of the mountain and see if there's rain coming. And so the Jews built a platform there. And I think this will help you see what I saw that day. this is my son and I, and this is where Elijah's servant, he behind him, that is the Valley of Megiddo, and Luke and I are facing toward the Mediterranean, and so Elijah's servant could see the Mediterranean in front of where Luke and I are at, and behind him is Megiddo, and there is a little river there where he slew the prophets of Baal. And so that was really my most moving time. It was like on our first day in Israel. This is like what we saw. It's like we just step off the bus and enter, you know, Bible history. And then just a few miles up the road was Megiddo. And this was as we were walking up there, those are the ruins of Megiddo. You kind of walk through all the rubble. They've got a little walkway there. And I told you this is where Brother Mark Trotter, I think this is Sherry Trotter with the blonde hair here, but that's Mark Trotter, and his back is to the Valley of Megiddo, and so he's talking about Revelation and the Battle of Armageddon, and he's a great preacher, and so they set up this little shelter there where you could see, get a front view. Anyway, this is the last thing I'll show you, and then we'll watch our video. But there's kind of a pit down here. That's how Megiddo got water. So some of these places, you wonder, how are they getting water to the top of a mountain before there's electricity, right? But they've got some aqueduct system, and they dug a tunnel. And so we got to go down in there, and they found a spring up there. And so that's how the whole city is. And it showed the destruction of where their big storage bins were for food, so they stored up food. And anyway, this is the old city of Megiddo, and the Valley of Armageddon. Megiddo is right before it. So, not quite seeing. I got to figure out how to get back to my video. I think that's it right there. So let me see. All right, so I'm going to start this, and I'll shut off a light. We got 30 minutes, so this should work out good. Let me just hit play here.
But did you know where this country actually comes from? Well, our story goes ancient name for Iran. You will see one answer, Persia. But that's only half true, because there is actually another name, one that holds a prophecy that the whole world forgot about. You probably already know Iran from the news, but did you know where this country actually comes from? Well, our story goes way back to around 2400 BC, and we are going to meet a man that you have definitely heard of, Noah. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. But here's where it gets interesting. His oldest son, Shem, had a son called Elam. But Elam wasn't just an ordinary kid, because in 2000 BC, Elam became the forefather of the Elamites. Okay, now take a good look at this. The name Elam actually means high in Assyrian, meaning the land was high up. These highlands weren't just some random hills. They stretched for about 1,000 miles, all the way from near Babylon towards the Mediterranean. Over time, both the land and the people changed and grew. The Elamites, who started out a lot like the early Sumerians, eventually became part of what we now call Iran. Did you catch that? In other words, every time the Bible talks about Elam, it's pointing directly to the very beginnings of Persia. So make sure you remember that name, because this timeline will reveal a very surprising prophecy about the people of Elam. Or should I say, the people of Iran. So let's jump forward 100 years to 1900 BC, because something huge is about to shake the people of Elam. The action kicks off during one of the Bible's earliest battles, the rescue of Lot by Abraham. Before you find out who wins, you need to see where it all happened. This is the Valley of Siddim near the Dead Sea, a place famously dotted with tar pits. And these pits would become a nightmare for one group of soldiers. Here's how it went down. Five kings from the Jordan decided to rebel against Chedorlaomer, the king of Elam. He had ruled them them for 12 years. And Cadaleoma, well, he didn't take the rebellion lightly. He called on his three key allies and marched south into Canaan. Elam was victorious, so much so that its enemies reached the Vale of Siddim. The valley's tar pits swallowed some fleeing soldiers, while the remaining ran for the hills. As you can imagine, the king of Elam didn't stop there, and so the rebellious cities were raided, and the citizens were carried off. Lot was one of them. This is the part where the tables turned, and not in the way that people expected. Abraham, another famous man from the Bible, decided that he and his 318 trained men from his household would not sit around. So he pursued the victorious king's north all the way past Dan and launched a night ambush. By God's guidance alone, Abraham routed Kedorlaomer's forces, recovering Lot, the other captives, and all the stolen goods. I was so taken aback the first time I saw this, because straight after the battle, Abraham meets Melchizedek, the king of Salem, a priest of the Most High God. Melchizedek blesses Abraham, offers him bread and wine, and makes it clear that it was God who had delivered Abraham's enemies into his hands. This is not a detail we can just skip past, because it was a beautiful picture of another high priest, a king who would come thousands of years later, and he would also tell all those who trust in him to share in his supper the bread and wine. I would do this to remember